karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti sorujuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. In this most beautiful and famous sloka from the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna is giving us the information of who it is that is qualified to return to him at the end of this life. Mamupetya punarajanma dukalayam ashashvatam napnavanti mahatmana samsidin paramam gata. That the great souls, they make their goal of life the kingdom of God. They never make their goal in life any of the attainments of this world, because all the attainments of this world are dukalayam ashashvatam. They are essentially the cause of all the miseries, because to the degree we become attached to what we attain in this world, to that degree we must suffer the bondage of repeated birth and death. Whether it is our wealth, whether it is our prestige, whether it is our fame, our family, our renunciation, our beauty, our abilities, if we become attached to any of these things, that very thing that is giving us so much joy becomes the cause of the repetition of birth and death. So therefore, we should make our goal the eternal abode of God. All the great wise men throughout history have agreed on this principle. And what is the qualification to attain the eternal abode of the Lord? Krishna explains right here. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never has to take birth in this world of suffering again, but attains my eternal abode. And Krishna is so kind. He is so infinitely merciful that he descends from his eternal spiritual abode into this material world only for the purpose of giving us the opportunity to understand the transcendental nature of his appearance and his activities. It is described previous to this shloka, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanaradhaya sambhavami yuge yuge. In order to deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. What is the difference between the Lord's appearance in this world and our appearance in this world? This is described here. Lord Kapila Dev has said, karmana daiva netrena. The conditioned soul is forced to take birth in a particular womb of a particular species of life due to his past karma. Therefore, for the ordinary soul, we say it is his birthday. But for the Lord, we never say birthday. We say his appearance day. Just like we celebrate our birthdays. Do you know what it was really like at the time of your birth? Huh? Was it a joyous occasion? You were crying and screaming. You were about this big, and you were being forced through an opening about this big. You're being crunched. And your mother, my God, you know what she was doing? She was screaming, she was crying, she was vowing at that time, I'll never do this again, this is too much. Right? Doesn't every mother? Of course they forget after time. But while it's happening, it's a very, very painful experience. Of course, I cannot speak from my own realizations. I can only speak from what I have heard. But the baby is crying, and the mother is crying, not in ecstasy, but in agony. Right? It is said when you cry cold tears, that's ecstatic. And when you cry hot tears, that means you're in great distress. And both the mother and the baby are just crying hot tears like anything. And the baby's just crying and crying and crying, and the mother is just, ha ha ha. And in this way, happy birthday. Huh? And we love to remember that day. Every year we celebrate that day. Fortunately, we forget what it was really like. But we read, when the Supreme Lord appears, it is altogether different. He is not forced to take birth because of his previous karma. He appears in this world by his own sweet will. He appears in this world to annihilate the miscreants, to deliver the pious, and to reestablish the principles of religion. But actually, does the Lord have to take birth himself to perform these three activities? He can do this through the agency of his devotees. He can destroy the miscreants in any way he wants, through the agency of material nature, through the agency of his devotees. He could deliver the pious through the scriptures, through the saints, similarly reestablish the principles of religion. The actual real reason why the Lord has to come is to attract the minds of the conditioned souls to his divine form, to his divine pastimes, and to his divine lila. And the more we understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Bhagavan's Leela, is completely transcendental, it is a total spiritual experience, to that extent we become spiritually purified. And therefore, the most important activity in our life is to hear the glories of the Lord and to chant the glories of the Lord. But we must hear from authoritative sources. Otherwise, you will not get the proper understanding. Just like there are so many people who have so many opinions of Lord Sri Krishna's Leela or Lord Sri Ramchandra's Leela. You cannot understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's appearance and activities unless you hear from those who are coming in a disciplic line of self-realized souls. One who knows God can reveal God. Otherwise, we find that there are so many people who know Krishna's pastimes, but they really do not know anything about Krishna. There are so many people who know Ram's Leela, but they know nothing about Ram. People are seeing the Mahabharata every Sunday morning. And as they're watching the pastimes, many of the depictions of Mahabharata are actually what is written in the book. Some of them are changed, but many of them are just like it is in the book. But whether it's a little changed or just like in the book, either way, most people cannot really understand what's going on internally. They just see it as an entertaining story, and they think because it's about God, it must be pious. Huh? But do they really understand the message? Do they really understand the nature of the Lord's activities in these divine leelas? it is impossible to understand without the explanation of the self-realized souls, or those who are acting on behalf of the self-realized souls. So therefore, to hear the glories of the Lord in the association of sincere devotees of the Lord is the most important part of our life, because it is only through this process that we can understand the transcendental nature of the appearance and activities of the Lord, and it is only by this process that our mind becomes attracted away from the temporary pastimes of this world and attracted to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So tonight, we are most fortunate. We are gathered together on the most sacred occasion of the appearance of the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari, as he appeared in his most beautiful and merciful form of the son of Dasarath, Sri Ramchandra. This story was originally told and written by the great sage Valmiki Muni. Valmiki Muni, as we know, was a highway robber and a hunter. He would torture and murder innocent creatures as his very means of livelihood. But of course, how many of us think of him like that? Huh? Does anyone condemn him for being like that? We glorify him for being like that. Because the more fallen a person is, the more glorious it is when he becomes great. Huh? Valmiki Muni, although living such a sinful and ruthless life, in the association of the great devotee Narada Muni, he became purified. Narada Muni taught him that if you want to be purified from all your sins, you must chant the name of Ram. Valmiki Muni was so sinful, he could not chant the name of Ram. Now some of us think that I'm so fallen and I'm addicted to so many sinful activities, what hope is there for me to become self-realized? Sometimes we become discouraged, do we not? Thinking I'm addicted to so many bad habits, I have so many attachments, my mind is so uncontrolled, how is it possible for me to become liberated in this life in Krishna consciousness? But every one of you in this room is able to chant the name of Ram, correct? Repeat after me. Ram. Everyone, raise your hand if you cannot chant the name of Ram. If you are so sinful that it's not possible to chant the name of Ram. That means you are all much more pious than Valmiki was. Because he could not do it. He was trying. Narada Muni was saying, Ram, Ram. And he couldn't do it. Even though Narada Muni convinced him of the sinful reactions that were coming upon him for all of his deeds, all of his crimes, he could not chant the name of Ram. So you know, the Acharya, he's not a self-righteous fanatic that says, okay, if you won't chant the name of Ram, that's the bona fide mantra, then I'm going somewhere else. I'm sorry, but I cannot help you. Huh? The Acharya is willing to adjust all the rules and regulations to somehow or other make a person Krishna conscious. Huh? Now, what Acharya has ever taught previously to chant the name of the god of death? Can you think of anyone? What bona fide guru taught chant Amara? What is Mara? Mara, Mara. Amara is the opposite. Mara. Mara is the lord of death. Nobody does. But Narada Muni knew that this man is so attached to death He's so intimate with killing that he'll be able to chant the name of Mara with great feeling. So therefore, we understand that this is the real Acharya. He's not simply self-righteous to maintain traditions, but he's willing to do whatever it takes to liberate those persons who he's preaching to. Huh? So he began to chant, Mara, 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 Marama, Rama, 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 Rama. And then by chanting, what was his qualification? His qualification was simply, he was willing to try to obey his guru. He had no qualification. He was such a sinful demon. He was a demon. But because he was simply willing to try to follow the instruction of his guru, sincerely, all of his shortcomings were put aside by the Supreme Lord Ram. And in a very short time, he was chanting the name of Ram purely. And then he was given the vision of the transcendental pastimes of Sri Ramchandra. And he wrote it down for all the world. And he wrote that as long as there are mountains securely placed on this earth, and as long as there are rivers flowing from those mountains to the sea, the holy name of Ram and the pastimes of Ramayan will be chanted by all pious men. Now Valmiki Muni, he wanted this great scripture to be chanted in the great cities of the world. So his two most intimate and pious disciples, he taught them Ramayana. And they were so virtuous that by hearing once, they learned it by memory. And they were dispatched to chant the Ramayana for the benefit of all living beings. Their names were Kusha and Lava. They happened to be the two sons of Sita and Ram, who from the time of their birth lived in the hermitage of Valmiki Muni after Sita Devi was banished to the forest. So Kusha and Lava came to Ayodhya, and in the holy streets of Ayodhya they began to chant the beautiful glories of the Ramayana. Of course, although they had identical bodily features as their father, Sri Ramchandra, they could not be recognized because they were living like ascetics, wearing the bark of trees with matted hair. And Lord Sri Ram, when he heard these pastimes being narrated, he invited Kusha and Lava into his palace court and invited all of his ministers and all the townspeople to listen attentively to the beautiful glories of the story of Sri Ram. And the narration of the Ramayana begins by Kusha and Lava narrating this pastime to Ram himself. It describes that in the holy city of Ayodhya, which is situated on the holy banks of the river Surayu, there was a great king of the name Dasarath. He was the king of the province of Kosala and a great descendant of Maharaj Ikshvaku of the Solar Dynasty. King Dasarath was a very pious and religious king. He was in the true sense a Rajarishi. He was simultaneously a saint and a king. He was a pure devotee of God. And everyone in his kingdom was thoroughly satisfied because he was teaching everyone to live perfectly in harmony with the laws of God. The kingdom of Ayodhya, because of the piety of this great king, was flourishing with prosperity. there was no poverty. There was great opulence. The roads were beautiful and clean, scented with sandalwood and fragrant oils. And the houses were made of marble and bedecked with jewels. And all the people were dressed in beautiful colored clothing. And everyone was constantly singing the glories of Lord Hari. Dasarath Maharaj, he had 350 queens. We are talking about the age of Treta, where man lived tens and thousands of years. And great kings, they were allowed to protect and care for as many women as they could keep satisfied. So you can imagine how great King Dasarath was, that he could keep 350 queens simultaneously fully satisfied. Huh? How many of you husbands can keep your one wife fully satisfied? Huh? Raise your hand if you can do that. I will not ask you to raise your hand if you cannot do it. We can understand how great and glorious this king was. And he was a Maharathi. In battle, he can destroy thousands of men at a time. One day, he approached his ministers. And he explained to them, as well as to the great saints and sages, that he was feeling great, great distress in his heart. Because although he was growing very, very old, he had not yet had a single son. And of course, for a king, it is very important to have a son, because someone must continue the dynasty. So he said that with all my wealth and with all my strength, and although I have conquered the whole world, I am the king of earth. And although all my subjects love me like a father, still my heart is empty because I have no son. He said, I desire to perform a sacrifice to Lord Vishnu in order to have a male son. At that time, his guru, Vasishtha Muni, he said, my dear king, I will make arrangements for this sacrifice. And then his very loyal and faithful minister, Sumantra, took him aside. He said, some many years ago, the great sage Sanat Kumar, he gave you a benediction. He told you that you would have one daughter and that you should name her Shanta and that you should marry her to the great sage Rishyashringa. And this same sage Rishyashringa, he would perform a sacrifice to Lord Vishnu, and from that sacrifice you will have four illustrious and glorious sons. So my feeling is you should go and find Rishyashringa. What happened is, after he had this beautiful daughter, Shantu, there was a king who was the king, his name was Romapad. He was the king of the Anga dynasty. And he had no children. So Dasarath was feeling very much for him. So he gave him his only daughter. And she grew up as the princess of Maharaj Romapad. And Maharaj Romapad, under Dasarath's instruction, married his daughter to Rishyashringa. So Dasarath Maharaj went to that place, and there was a cordial greeting, and there was a warm friendship, and after 1 week he brought Rishyashringa back to Ayodhya. And then, in the presence of all the great saints and sages, and all the friends of Dasarath, he began to exclaim his great distress. And Rishyashringa, he replied, "My dear king, he said, I will perform an Ashwamedha Yajna to Lord Hari. And I promise you, the Supreme Lord himself will appear in four forms as your sons." So then he began to perform the sacrifice. And when it came time to offer oblations to the various demigods, all the demigods appeared on the scene, headed by Lord Brahma. And they all partook of their share of the sacrifice. At that time, all the demigods approached Brahmaji. They took the opportunity. And with folded hands and tears in their eyes, they began to explain, "Brahmaji, the great Rakshasa, blood-sucking demon, Ravana, he is completely causing chaos throughout the entire universe. He is killing innocent people, sucking their blood. He is destroying the sacrifice of the Brahmins. He is harassing the demigods, exploiting their property. In this way, the whole universe is in great anxiety. And he is so powerful because you have given him these benedictions that no one can defeat him. So Brahmaji, please do something. You are our father. You are our guide." At that time, Lord Brahma, he began to think, what is to be done? And he began to pray to Lord Vishnu. And just at that time, from behind the clouds, a most beautiful and effulgent sight was beheld by everyone in the assembly house of Maharaj Dasarath. There, shining like millions of suns, appeared Lord Narayan, descending on his bird carrier Garuda. And Lord Brahma began to pray, "Lord Narayan, this demon Rakshasa, Ravana, is causing so much distress. You are the only one that can annihilate him." And Lord Vishnu explained that, "I will soon come. I will appear as the four sons of Dasarath. And Ravana will be killed." And after confirming the fulfillment of their desires, Lord Narayan again ascended to Vaikuntha and disappeared. And then Lord Brahma, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaye, who is receiving information from Krishna in his heart, he explained that, "All you demigods, Vishnu wants you to help him in this great battle against Ravana. So therefore, you should all expand yourselves and take birth as monkeys in the jungle of Kishkindha. And you should expand yourself with all the power and all the strength you have now. And very soon, the Supreme Lord Hari will come, and together you will relieve the earth of the burden of Ravana in his Rakshasa dynasty." At that time, all the demigods left. They all returned to their abodes, and they all began making their plans. First, the King of Heaven, Indra, he expanded himself and begot a child. His name was Bali. Bali possessed all the strength and potency of his father, Indra. And then the sun god, Vivaswan, he begot the most illustrious and faithful Sugriva, who was equal to him in all respects. And Kuvera, the great treasurer of the demigods, he begot the great monkey child, Gandhamandana. And Agni, he expanded himself as Nila. And Brihaspati expanded himself as Nala. And the Aswini Kumaras expanded the two of them, as Mahinda and Vivida. I'm sorry, Agni expanded himself as Shushena. In this way, these monkeys were very powerful. They could lift mountains. They could make the earth tremble by their footsteps. At the end of the sacrifice, Rishyashringa took the Mahaprasad, the Payasan, and told King Dasarath that you give this Payasan to your wives, and whoever drinks this, Lord Narayan will become their son. So, first, Dasarath divided this prasad in half. And he gave the first half to his principal wife, Kausalya. And she drank it. And then he took the other half and divided that in half. And gave half to Sumitra. And then he took that half and divided it into half. And gave half to Kaikeyi, and gave the other half again to Sumitra. Very soon after drinking this divine Mahaprasad, all the three mothers became pregnant. This is the transcendental nature of the appearance of the Lord. He does not have to come into the world through the same medium that we do. Ram was born from the union of his mother eating Mahaprasad. And 1 year after this sacrifice, on the most auspicious time, when all the constellations were in perfect order, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as the son of Kausalya in his most beautiful form of Sri Ram. And then Bharat was born of Kaikeyi, and Lakshman was born of Sumitra, and his brother was Shatrughna. And these four children, they were none other than the four expansions of Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. They were all Vaikuntha murtis of Sri Hari. It is described that they were so beautiful. All auspicious signs decorated all of them. But of all of them, Ram was the most beautiful. His eyes were like lotus flowers. His every limb was delicate and soft, but at the same time, most powerful and strong. His arms extended to his knees. It is described that on his feet and on his hands were the signs of the conch, the disc, the lotus flower, and the club. And Vasishtha Muni performed the birth ceremony, And he also performed the name-giving ceremony. And when these beautiful sons appeared as the princes of Dasarath, there was great celebration throughout the city of Ayodhya. For years and years and years, everyone was awaiting Dasarath's child to be born. So Dasarath Maharaj, he was giving tens and thousands of beautiful cows with golden ornaments, golden hooves, and golden horns to the Brahmins. He was giving mountains of grains and beautiful jewels and silks in charity to the Vaishnavas. He was preparing sumptuous, wonderful prasad and delivering it to all living beings. In this way, there was a celebration. And all the inhabitants of Ayodhya were singing and dancing. It was a festival that no one has ever seen, all celebrating the beautiful appearance of Sri Ram. And actually, this is the way we should all, every year, celebrate the appearance of Sri Ram. The residents of Ayodhya, it described, they were singing, they were dancing, they were just joyful, eating nice prasad, distributing nice prasad, giving gifts, receiving gifts. Because everyone's minds were immersed only in the beautiful form of this child, Ram. They completely forgot the miseries of material existence. As they began to grow older, it is described, they began to learn how to walk. And the three mothers, Sumitra, Kaikeyi, and Kausalya, their love just knew no bounds. And Dasarath Maharaj, sharing that love, he was perfectly satisfied 24 hours a day, simply seeing the beautiful form of Ram. Indeed, every inhabitant of Ayodhya shared the same love for Ram. He became, as he grew older, most learned in the Vedas, a most expert archer, a most expert charioteer. And the whole city was simply awaiting the auspicious day when he would be coronated as king. It is described that when Lord Sri Ramchandra was 16 years old, the great sage Vishwamitra Muni came to the kingdom of Ayodhya. Vishwamitra was living in the jungle. He had no material possessions. He was a hermit. He was a beggar. And Maharaj Dasarath was the king of the world. But when Vishwamitra came into the kingdom, Dasarath greeted him with such humility and devotion. He got off his own throne and put Vishwamitra on his throne. And he washed his feet and worshipped his feet. You see, this is the secret that made great kings great. The great kings understood that the greatest kings are those who have renounced all attachments to this material world. You see, the crown of a king is considered insignificant compared to the opulence of the robes of a renunciate. Because the opulence of renunciation is the greatest opulence. One who conquers all the lands is not as great as a man who conquers his senses. Huh? We see in our history there are people, great souls, who have conquered so many lands, but they could not control their own senses. So one who has conquered the senses, he is considered, that is why a king is called Maharaj, but a renunciate is also called Maharaj, great king. But they are different kinds of king. One wears a crown, and one wears either the bark of the tree or a simple dress of a renunciate. But of the two Maharajas, the qualification of the king Maharaj is that he bows down and worships as the menial servant, the renunciates, who have given their lives in the service of God. So Maharaj Dasarath, he understood that the real treasure of his whole kingdom and of his whole life was completely dependent on the blessings of the great souls. Sometimes people think that those in the renounced order are lazy. But Maharaj Dasarath was not thinking about like that for Vishwamitra. He wasn't saying, why don't you have a job? In fact, Maharaj Dasarath was just waiting for the day when he could give up his job and be like that. Huh? But he knew it's more difficult to do that than maintain his job as king of the world. It's a hard job. So he worshipped Vishwamitra. This is the glory of a grihastha, is that he humbles himself before those who have sacrificed everything in the service of the Lord. So Dasarath Maharaj said to Vishwamitra Muni, I want to offer you everything in my kingdom. Whatever you like is yours. Now, you have to be very careful when you say like that to a sadhu. So he said, I will offer you anything you like. Whatever you desire is yours. After all, I am the representative of God. I am the king. I can fulfill any desire you have. Vishwamitra Muni, he looked at Dasarath Maharaj. Yes, my dear king, I know that you are true to your word. In the forest where we are performing our sacrifice, there are two very, very powerful asuras, rakshasas, who are constantly spoiling all of our spiritual activities by contaminating the sacrificial arena. Their names are Maricha and Subahu. I want to take Lord Ram, your son, into the forest, because it is only he who could destroy these demons. My God, when Dasarath heard this, he was stunned. How can you ask this? Who are these demons? I am a Maharati. I will lead my armies. I will take one Akshohini division of soldiers. I will lead the ranks, and we will destroy those demons. But leave Ram at home. What is the problem? Let me do it. But Ram is just a young child. He's hardly 16 years old. He's not very experienced at fighting. He's still learning his lessons in school. He has a very frail and young body. How can he fight against these asuras? Tell me a little more about these asuras. Vishwamitra said they are associates of Ravana. And when Dasarath heard this, he became very afraid. He said, no one can touch Ravana or his associates. They are very powerful. Even I cannot stand up against them. Even Indra cannot stand up against them. He said, take my whole kingdom, take everything, but not Ram. I cannot bear separation from him. I cannot give you this. Upon hearing this, Vishwamitra became very angry. He became so angry that the earth began to tremble. He said, Dasarath Maharaj, if you relinquish truth, if you go back on your word, all your piety and your entire kingdom and your entire fame of your dynasty will be finished today. I will leave this place, and along with me will be the end of everything in your life. At that time, Vasishtha Muni told King Dasarath that this Vishwamitra is very powerful. You do not want to offend him. Give him your son. Your son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one's going to defeat him. And even if you think he will, if he's under the care of Vishwamitra Muni, Vishwamitra Muni could destroy all the Rakshasas single-handedly. He is the most powerful of all sages. The only reason why he's asking for your son is he wants your son to be glorified. So on the advice of Vasishtha, Dasarath said, all right, please take care of him. And then Vishwamitra Muni took Ram into the forest. As they wandered through the forest, they came into one jungle. And this jungle was very, very mysterious. There was practically no life in this jungle except fierce beasts and vultures. And Ram, he said, what is happening? Why is this like this? Vishwamitra told him that there was a great female Rakshasi of the name Tataka. She was the mother of Maricha. He said, at one time this forest was a very holy place where great saints and sages would come to perform sacrifice. But she has simply come and she has destroyed everything. She eats everything in sight. She loves the taste of blood. She absolutely horrifies everyone with her deformed features and her ghastly roar. Ram, you should kill this demon. So Ram took his bow and he just pulled the string, and it made such a noise that all the Rakshasas, who were the associates of Tataka, became very afraid. But she became outraged. Who has come? And she began screaming and roaring, and she came into the forest and attacked Ram and Lakshman. They were covered with dust, a cloud of dust, and she began to shower stones and rocks upon them. And she was screaming a hideous sound. At that time, Ram took his bow and he cut off her two arms. And she was even more angry. And she went up into the sky, and Lakshman cut off her nose and her ears. And she began to shower all sorts of abominable things and shower them with rocks and stones. In this way, she was so angered that at last she plunged at Ram with the speed of Indra's thunderbolt. And Ramchandra took his celebrated bow and shot an arrow into her breast. And she fell down screaming. And in a moment, she died. And everyone was very happy. Then the forest again became an auspicious place, and they took rest that night. The next morning they came to the hermitage of Vishwamitra, and they began to perform a sacrifice. And Ram and Lakshman stayed up day and night with Vishwamitra, waiting for Maricha and Subahu to come. They stayed up for 6 days. And on the sixth day, the final day, all of a sudden, the sky became very dark. And they heard screaming sounds. And Maricha and Subahu, very, very powerful Rakshasas, came down onto the sacrificial arena and began to throw stool and pus and urine and bloody human mutilated torsos all over the sacrificial arena. Ram took his bow and he took his arrow and he shot it into Maricha, and it was so powerful that it threw him 800 miles into the middle of the ocean. And then he took another arrow and it pierced Subahu's heart and he died instantly. And then he took another arrow. It was the arrow of Vayu. And it scattered all of the other Rakshasas to flee for their lives. Thus, Vishwamitra was very pleased. And then Ram, very humbly, he approached Vishwamitra, who was now his guru. And he said, "Is there any other service I can render for you?" In the evenings, Lord Sri Ramchandra would massage the feet and massage the legs of his spiritual master, along with Lakshman. They would go out and collect wood for their spiritual master to perform his sacrifices. Indeed, they would perform the most menial, insignificant services. And every day they would inquire with great humility for Vishwamitra Muni to instruct them on the goal of life and the science of the Vedas. Some people ask, do we really need a guru? Ramchandra appeared to show every human being how he must live. Do you think Jagat Guru, Bhagavan Sri Ramchandra needs a guru? He is the knower of past, present, and future. He is the author of the Vedas. He is the goal of the Vedas. But just to show us, whoever you are, however great you are, you must humble yourself and submit yourself to a spiritual master. Some people say, "I do not need a guru. I know Krishna." But even Krishna, he will not even say that. Even Krishna accepts guru. So the Supreme Lord, who is the enjoyer of all sacrifices, bhoktaram jagatapasam, who is the proprietor of everything, who is the master of all living beings, to set the example for us, every day and every night he would massage his guru's lotus feet. He would inquire submissively from him. And his goal was simply to please his spiritual master. So Vishwamitra, being very pleased, you see, when the spiritual master is pleased with the disciple, the spiritual master shares his life with the disciple. So Vishwamitra began to take Ram and Lakshman on a pilgrimage to the forest. And one day they came to the very, very ancient holy city of Mithila. When they saw the beauty of the city, they were struck with wonder. How clean and how fragrant were the flowers, and how beautiful and charming was the gardens and the forests, and how peaceful and pure-hearted were all the residents. Vishwamitra Muni began to explain that this is the great king, Janak, who rules over this holy land of Mithila. He explained that in this city there is the mighty bow of Lord Shankar, and people have been coming for years and years from all over the universe to try to lift this bow and bend it. Because whoever does attains the most beautiful goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, as their wife in marriage. Now let us come into Mithila and let us see the beauty of this place. It is described that as they were As they came into the kingdom, when the word came that Vishvamitra Muni arrived, King Janak and all of his ministers, with great devotion, worshipped his lotus feet and took them into their palace. After some time, Ram and Lakshman, with the permission of their guru, began to wander to see the beauty of this great city. They came into a particular garden, which was the garden of Sita. In that garden there was a temple of Goddess Parvati, and Sita Devi would daily pray to her and worship her. When Sita's friends saw the beauty of Lord Ramchandra, they were immediately struck with wonder. How can anyone be so beautiful as him? He is the perfect match for our Sita Devi. So they went and got Sita. We want to show you something. Come here. And Sita, she looked through the bushes, and when she saw the beautiful form of Ram, immediately the eternal love between the Lord and his consort was awakened within her heart. And then Sri Ram, when he saw the beauty of Sita, that unlimited, infinite, divine love awakened within his heart. And when they looked at one another, Sita, being very shy, immediately looked toward his lotus feet and fixed her eyes on his lotus feet. And through her eyes, she engraved the form of his lotus feet within the core of her heart. In this way, in the hearts of Sita and Ram, the seed of love began to grow. At that time, Vishvamitra, he asked Janak, "Where is this great bow? Tell us about it." Ram had joined them at the time with Lakshman. And Janaka said that at one time, Lord Shiva, he gave as a gift this great bow to the demigods. And they gave it to my forefathers. This bow is so powerful that no man has ever even been able to lift it. But I have made a vow. He said, one day when I was watching my beautiful little daughter Sita cleaning, she lifted this bow and dusted under it and put it back. How is this possible? Even the greatest demigods, the greatest rakshasas, the greatest kings, they cannot lift it. And my little daughter lifted. So I vow that it will take the man who strings this bow to marry my daughter. But he said, unfortunately, I think my daughter will have to die a widow because there's no one in the whole universe that can lift this bow. The Vishvamitra Muni said, but Ram can lift this bow. You bring it. So thousands of men had to drag this bow into the assembly. And thousands of people came into the arena to see. At that time, Ram, he effortlessly lifted the bow. And he pulled the string, and the bow cracked. And when this bow broke, it made such a tumultuous and thunderous sound that all the universe began to shake. At that time, the beautiful goddess Sita, whose heart was set, fixed on the lotus feet of Sri Ram, she put the garland of victory around his lotus neck. And this most beautiful and wonderful reunion of the Lord with his eternal consort brings great joy to the life of all devotees. You see, a devotee's pleasure is in giving Krishna pleasure, in giving Ram pleasure. The residents of Mithila, the residents of Ayodhya, and all great devotees of the Lord, they are constantly in transcendental bliss because their only pleasure is in seeing the pleasure of Ram. The perfection of life is to forget, what do I like, what do I want, what do I need, and to simply think in terms of what will please Ram. So to the extent we give up our own selfish interests in life and make our only pleasure pleasing Krishna, to that extent we become transcendental to all the miseries of this world. This is bhakti. Understand, the residents of Ayodhya and Mithila, they were not jnanis. They were not yogis. They were ordinary people. They had jobs. They were merchants. They were politicians. They were warriors. They were housewives. But they were the most fortunate and the most highly spiritually advanced. Why? Because their only pleasure in life was giving pleasure to Sita and Ram. Of course, we would be very happy to continue on the narration of Ramayana, but I think it would become very late. So, one drop from the ocean of the Ramayana is all we have time to taste this evening. But the real message that we would like for everyone to understand is what is really of value in our life. To put aside all things that we consider valuable and strive for those things that Ram feels is valuable. It is said, when you decorate the deity of the Lord, because you find such great pleasure in seeing Krishna's satisfaction, you lose all desire to decorate your own dying body. When you cook nice food for the pleasure of the Lord, you lose all desire to cook nice food for your own fastidious senses. When you work and offer as sacrifice the fruits of your actions for the pleasure of the Lord, you become indifferent to your own insatiable, lusty desires for more and more fame, more and more power, more and more prestige, more and more wealth. By watering the root of the tree, we become satisfied. Ram is the root. He is the root of all existence. So by hearing these transcendental pastimes of the Lord, let us understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is appearing in such a wonderful and attractive way, just so that we will be attracted to please Him, to serve Him, to glorify Him. And in the association of devotees, this message comes to life in our heart. So let us associate with devotees. Let us follow in the footsteps of the residents of Ayodhya and the residents of Mithila. And on this most holy day of Ram Navami, let us reconfirm our vows in life. Let us reconfirm the direction of life we want to strive for. Athapum vird vijastreshtas varna shrami vibhaga shashvanushyatasya dharmasya samsadir haritosha. Whatever your occupation, whatever your position in society, the goal is to please Krishna, to please Ram. Even if the whole world hates you, if you please Ram, your life is perfect. But if the whole world glorifies you, but Lord Ram is not pleased, then your life is a useless waste. Huh? And what pleases the Lord more than anything else? In the age of Kali Yuga, it is described, Krishna Varnam Tvasa Krishnam Sango Pangasha Parashadam Jagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Janti Hi Sumedasa. By performing the sacrifice of attentively chanting the holy name, more than anything else, this gives pleasure to Krishna. It is so simple. You may say, why is he pleased by such a simple thing as me chanting his holy name? Because in Kali Yuga, that's the best you can do. Huh? To please him the way they pleased him in other yugas, it is impossible for you today. But if you simply chant attentively his holy name and associate with his devotees, there is nothing that will please him more than this. So now it is time for the arti of Sri Ramchandra, and we will not go beyond the conch shell tonight. So prasad will be in 25 minutes. But it is an opportunity to please Lord Ramchandra, just as the residents of Ayodhya and Mithila did on his birth, on Sita's birth. On Sita's birthday we can explain her birth. They were also dancing and chanting. And on Ram's birth they were dancing and chanting. So today is Ram's appearance day. So let us celebrate his coming into our lives on this most auspicious occasion by chanting his holy name, by dancing, and by remembering his mercy in our life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Not evil demon is harassing everyone within the three worlds. He even seeks to defeat Indra, the king of heaven. He fearlessly torments great rishis, Gandharvas, Brahmins, and demons alike. O Brahma, we greatly fear this Rakshasa. Please find some way to destroy him. The history of Ravana's incarnation is an interesting one. Originally, Ravana and his brother Kumbhakarna had guarded the gates of Vaikuntha, the Supreme Lord's eternal abode. At that time, their names were Jai and Vijay. Because they offended the four Kumaras, who were great sages, the Kumaras cursed them to take birth in the material world. When the Supreme Lord Vishnu informed them that they could take 7 births as devotees or 3 births as demons, they chose the shorter exile as demons because residents of Vaikuntha deplore separation from the Lord's lotus feet. They did, however, receive the boon of never forgetting the Lord while on earth. Thus they are considered eternally liberated associates, Nitya Siddha, of Lord Vishnu. Even by thinking of the Lord inimically, as demons do, one can be liberated. Of course, we should think of God favorably, but it is significant that He is so powerful that even demons can be purified by thinking of Him. Wanting to exhibit His prowess in fighting, the Supreme Lord chose Vajai and Vijay to be His opponents. By His grace, they became so strong that only the Lord Himself could defeat them. Therefore, when Jai and Vijay took their births as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they were killed by the Lord appearing as Lord Varaha and Lord Narasingha, respectively. In their second births, they came as Ravana and Kumbhakarna and were killed by Lord Ramchandra. And in their third births, they appeared as Shishupal and Dantavakra and were killed by Lord Sri Krishna. They were then able to return to Vaikuntha and resume their posts as guards of that transcendental abode. After hearing the demigod's petition to rid the universe of the troublesome Ravana, Lord Brahma considered various solutions. Finally he said, "Indeed, I have granted a great boon to Ravana, whereby he cannot be killed by any Gandharva, demigod, Rakshasa, Naga, or inhabitant of the lower planetary systems. However, Ravana did not ask for invincibility against human beings. Therefore, O demigods, be confident that very soon the Lord will rid the universe of this demon." As Brahma was speaking to the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, suddenly appeared in the sky, riding on the back of His winged carrier, the great bird Garuda. As the Supreme Lord approached, His transcendental effulgence illumined everything in all directions. The Lord wore yellow garments, and in His four hands He held a conch, disc, lotus flower, and club. He was bedecked with golden ornaments, and on His chest with a Kastuba mani, jewel, and the mark of Srivats. Upon seeing Him, all the demigods offered obeisances. Then Lord Brahma said, "O Almighty Lord Vishnu, You are the master of all demigods, including Lord Shiva. Please incarnate on this earth as the son of King Dasarath and kill the demon Ravana, who is filling the three worlds with fear. This mighty Rakshasa is oppressing all the demigods and sages. Because we wish him annihilated, we have come here to seek your protection. O chastiser of foes, you are the supreme resort and shelter of all of us. Please descend to this material world and destroy our enemies." Hearing the demigod's humble appeal, Lord Vishnu agreed to accept King Dasarath as his father by taking birth in the wombs of the king's principal wives. Then, bidding farewell to the demigods, he returned to his abode in the Vaikunthas. The sage Rishyashringa completed the Aswamedha sacrifice, and King Dasarath gave half of the Lord's prasadam, the holy sacrificial food, to his wife Kausalya, and the other half to his wives Kaikeyi and Sumitra. After the sacrifice, Lord Brahma spoke to the demigods, "Please beget partial manifestations of yourselves within the wombs of monkeys. This progeny should equal you in strength, be well versed in Vedic literature, and endowed in all mystic powers. They should be very intelligent, swift, and expert in warfare. They will assist Lord Vishnu in killing the chief of the Rakshasas, Ravana, as well as his followers. Indeed, their Shiftin, Jambavan, has already been begotten by me, having taken birth from my mouth." After hearing this, all the demigods, rishis, and sages begot thousands of heroic monkeys for the purpose of aiding Lord Vishnu. Lord Indra, the chief of the demigods, begot Vali, who equaled him in strength. The sun god Vivaswam begot Sugriva, the younger brother of Ali, the sage Brihaspati, spiritual master of the demigods, begot the mighty monkey Tara, who was most intelligent. Kuvera, the lord of wealth, begot the monkey Gandamandana. Vishwakarma, the architect of the demigod, begot the powerful monkey named Nala. The fire god Agni begot the glorious and valiant Nila. The rich and beautiful Aswini Kumaras begot the monkeys Mahinda and Vivida. Varuna, the demigod of water, begot the monkey Sushena. Parjanya, the god of the rain, begot Saraba. And the wind god Vayu begot Hanuman. Of all the monkeys, Hanuman was the strongest and most intelligent. He could withstand the force of a thunderbolt, and he was as swift as the Lord Vishnu himself. The principal apsaras, Vidyadhara women, the wives of the Nagas and the Gandharva women, also gave birth to children in the form of monkeys endowed with gigantic bodies and mystic powers. Each monkey had the strength of thousands of elephants. With their arms alone, the monkeys could uproot gigantic trees and throw huge rocks with great force. They all had extremely sharp teeth, claws capable of tearing out the heart of any rakshasa. In fact, they could agitate the sea with their great strength and pulverize the earth simply by walking. Their legs were so powerful that they could leap great distances and jump as high as the clouds. Their hands were so strong that they could seize elephants, and their roaring was so great that they could knock birds from the sky. Moreover, these monkeys could assume any form at will. Living in the mountains and forests, they sought the protection of their chiefs. Some monkeys followed Vali and Sugriva, where others followed Nala, Nila, Hanuman, and others. All the monkeys, however, considered Vali to be their king and lord. The monkey chiefs were so great that they looked like massive clouds covering the peaks of mountains. Indeed, they were given these gigantic bodies just to assist Lord Sri Ramchandra. After the successful jagya, directed by the great sage Rishyashringa, King Dasarath dwelt joyfully in his capital. His principal wives were pregnant, having partaken of Vishnu Prasadam from the sacrifice, and they appeared more effulgent than the sun. Feeling greatly satisfied, the king waited for the Supreme Lord himself to take birth as his son. A full year after the sacrifice, when the star Purnavasu was ascending, the sun was in Aries, Mars was in Capricorn, Saturn was in Libra, Jupiter was in Cancer, and the moon was in Pisces. The eldest of King Dasarath's queens, Kausalya, gave birth to Lord Ram, who is the Lord of the universe, the supreme personality of Godhead himself, Lord Vishnu. Ram, the greatest descendant of the line of King Ikshvaku, was endowed with all auspicious divine markings. His eyes were tinged with red and his full lips were also red. His long arms extended down to his knees, and the symbols of Vishnu, the lotus, conch, thunderbolt, and other markings could be seen on the palms of his hands and in the soles of his feet. King Dasarath's next son, named Bharat, took birth from the womb of Queen Kaikeyi. Being a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bharat also possessed great strength. After Bharat's birth, Queen Sumitra gave birth to Lakshman and Shatrughna, who were also expansions of the Supreme Lord. Upon the birth of Lord Ram, all the demigods and the heavenly planets began singing and playing musical instruments. The heavenly apsaras danced, and all the Gandharvas, Siddhas, and Kinaras, and Vidyadharas assembled in the sky to offer prayers to the Lord and shower the earth with flowers. Everyone in Ayodhya rejoiced at the appearance of Lord Ramchandra. Many people danced and chanted, and everyone felt jubilant. All the roads leading to Ayodhya were filled with sweet songs, and King Dasarath, being very pleased, performed a splendorous name-giving ceremony for his wonderful son, giving mounds of brilliant jewels, thousands of cows, and many other valuable gifts to the Brahmins.
The priest, Vasishtha Muni, performed all the purificatory ceremonies for the four divine boys, Ram, Bharat, and Lakshman, and Shatrughna. In due course, other ceremonies, from the bestowal of names to the presentation of the sacred thread, were performed by Vasishtha Muni. Very soon, King Dasarath's four illustrious sons became masters of the Vedas and heroes intent on benefiting everyone. Lord Ram was expert at chariot fighting and riding elephants and horses. His special love, however, was archery. In all ways, he was especially devoted to his father's service. Lord Rama's younger brother, Lakshman, was deeply attached to Ram and tried to satisfy him in every way. Rama loved Lakshman so much that he could not even sleep without him, nor would Ram even eat when his brother was not present. Whenever Lord Ram went riding on horseback or took out a chariot, Lakshman was with him, guarding him on all sides. Just as Lakshman served Ram, Shatrughna served Bharat. And in this way, the four sons were inseparable and very dear to one another. Seeing their excellent qualities, King Dasarath was extremely delighted. Indeed, the four boys always dwelt in the core of his heart. This is the nature of love. The beloved dwells in the core of one's heart and cannot be forgotten even for a moment. As Lord Krishna says, his pure devotee is always within the core of his heart, and he is always in theirs. They are most dear to him, and he is most dear to them. The devotees do not know anything but their worshipable Lord, but always protect the souls surrendered to him. There is no question of separation, neither in this world nor the next, for the Lord and his devotees live eternally in transcendental bliss, far beyond the mortal cares of this world of birth and death. Because King Dasarath was always merged in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of his four sons, he knew full happiness, and his heart was completely satisfied. Sri Ramchandra ki. So this evening at 7 o'clock, we will have the holy Abhishek ceremony for the pleasure of Sri Sri Sitaram. And then we will have a discussion on the pastimes of Lord Sri Ramchandra. And then we will have the auspicious aarti to celebrate the appearance of Sri Ram. Lord Ramchandra appeared at noon, so the devotees fast until noon. On this special day, we should be very, very attentive to attract the mercy of Lord Sri Ramchandra by always thinking of him, by speaking of him, and by hearing of him. Whatever time we have at our disposal, we should be reading the pastimes of the Lord and discussing amongst one another this most beautiful and wonderful Leela as depicted in the Ramayana. And of course, we should work very hard and attentively in our devotional activities, and we should strive to consciously offer our every act, our every thought, and our every word in the loving service of our Guru Maharaj for the glorification of Sri Ram. So let us invite Sri Ramchandra to appear on this holy day of Ram Navami within the core of our own hearts by sincerely calling upon His holy names, by sincerely finding relish and satisfaction in describing His glorious pastimes. In this way, the Lord appears in this world to display His super excellent opulences, primarily to attract our minds away from the things of the senses and again toward the shelter of His lotus feet. How holy and special is the day of Ram Navami. Of all Lord Sri Krishna's incarnations, Lord Sri Ramchandra has displayed such an exciting, beautiful, and sweet pastime, manifesting the beautiful, loving reciprocation of pure love with His devotees, displaying His super excellent heroic power to defeat or annihilate all demoniac forces. Lord Sri Ramchandra appeared in the guise of a human being to show by His own example how the perfect human being should behave. He also appeared as king to show the world by His own example the duties of a great king. In this way, Sri Ramchandra was absolutely perfect example in everything He did for all humanity to follow. So let us meditate upon the mercy of Sri Ramchandra, and then it is for certain that divine love for His lotus feet will awaken within our heart, and we will taste the sweetness of pure devotion, and then our love, our lives will find great fulfillment in His divine service. Thank you very much.